Hey family, this is Jan Desper-Peters, and I am the new podcast host for the BTST Meeting You Where You Are podcast. And I am excited today because for my first podcast, I have an incredible guest. She is a former music industry executive. She's an author. She's a philanthropist. She started her own nonprofit. And so help me be excited about having today, Shanti Doss.
Thank you.
Shanti, I'm so excited to have you here. And when I was just reading about you and all the wonderful things that you're doing, I was wondering, when you were a little girl, did you say when people asked you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Did you say, I want to be a music executive?
No, not then. Honestly, when I was really little, I wanted to be a corporate lawyer.
Okay.
And I don't know why. I just think I saw some lawyers on TV, and then I asked my sister what corporate lawyers did, and she said they help companies and they made a lot of money.
Right.
So that
right,
was
right.
First. And then I wanted to be a sports announcer, and then music came.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you've been in the business and you've worked with some of the most talented people, Toni Braxton, mm-hmm. TLC, Outkast.
Yep.
And so after I read after like 10 years in New York, you decided, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. Tell us what led to that decision.
So my dad actually took his own life when I was 7 months old, which was tough on us growing up in African-American culture. You know, as you guys know, you don't talk about your problems. You know, not a lot of people in our community went to therapy or counseling. And so I buried a lot of those feelings. But as I, you know, climbed the ladder of success in the entertainment industry, I started kind of peeling back some of the layers about, you know, some of my own emotions and things that were going on. And so things got really tough for me in 2010. I lost my uncle. My mom developed Alzheimer's. I went through some health issues. And so it was just a really challenging year for me. And I also found myself being depressed at the office. And, you know, I was at the top of my game.
Right.
I was head of marketing at Universal Motown, making a ton of money, corner office. You know, I was living the dream, quote
right.
unquote, right? But I knew that something wasn't quite right, and, you know, I made a conscious decision to come back home and deal with my health and wellness, which included my mental health, but I didn't even really realize that at the time, right? I just knew that I was stressed out, but I didn't know what to call it. So I just, you know, quit and kind of walked away from it all.
Right, and I know that a lot of people think that, just like you said, at the top of your game, dream job, making a lot of money, you know, having fabulous friends and associates, and then being depressed and what that feels like. And then what were some of the things you did to really address that?
So coming back home, initially, before I knew kind of that I was depressed, I just started doing a lot of community service work and giving back. And I found that that was actually, it was almost therapeutic for me. And it was kind of a form of self-care. Again, I didn't realize it, but you know, I was happy when I was helping others. So I started curating and producing a lot of community service events in the Atlanta area, and then ended up forming my own foundation, which I call the Hip Hop Professional Foundation. But something happened tragic in 2014. My best friend since middle school took her own life.
Right.
And I was one of the last friends that talked to her. And so I blamed myself for a while. So that was really difficult. So then that year between 2014, when that happened, and into 2015 is when I went through my own really dark days, excuse me, of depression. Not so much anxiety at that period, but a lot of, like, dark days where I didn't want to get out of the bed. I didn't really want to go to parties and be around friends. I was high functioning because some of the stuff I just had to go to kind of pay the bills. But I didn't really like being around my friends and my family as much. And I found myself, when I was by myself, having these really awful thoughts of suicidal ideation. And one night I counted up all the pills in my medicine cabinet and actually, you know, had planned out my funeral, had kind of gone through it all in my head, trying to figure out how it would affect certain people in my life. And so the night that I did contemplate taking the pills, I just got out of the house.
Did you have someone you could talk to? Did you reach out to anyone?
So I did not reach out to anyone, which is what, you know, we try to tell people from an advocacy perspective that you got to have someone that you can talk to and share when you feel like you're in crisis. What I did was I was just driving around. I was crying uncontrollably. And then I went to a store and ran into one of my girlfriends and who lived way on the other side of town. And I thought, wow, this is just God intervening now that I look back at it. And so she convinced me to call my sister. And my sister made me call because she was in a different city. And since she couldn't get to me, she was like, you need to hang up and call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline if you feel like you're, you know, seriously going to harm yourself. So I did that. And then I texted with my pastor, Dr. Raphael G. Warnock. And he was like, I'll pray with you, but I need you to go get help. And we don't always find that in faith communities, you know, where the pastor knows how to either refer out or kind of like help you through a crisis. So I'm to this day, very grateful to my pastor. And so then, you know, of course, I talked to my sister over the weekend, and then I called my primary healthcare physician on Monday, who then referred me to a psychiatrist.
It feels like you're doing something that I heard a pastor say one time, making your misery your ministry, that you have done this wonderful work around mental health because it was something that started as an issue in your life at a very early age. So talk to us about Silence the Shame.
So yeah, I do feel like it's a ministry now. I feel like God just kind of handed it to me. It's interesting, when Bobby Christina took ill, you know, people weren't sure if she had attempted suicide or if she was sick or if it was an overdose. And so I was on the radio station in Atlanta, Georgia, and we were just talking about emotional health and wellness overall. We were obviously not trying to speculate anything about it because we know now that she did not take her own life. But again, weren't sure what was going on there. And so I just came on the radio show talking about depression and anxiety and so forth. And the word silence to shame just kind of rolled off of my tongue. And that's when I knew, like, okay, this is it. So I started opening up a lot in 2016, end of 2015, beginning of 2016, and just sharing on social media, like to friends and peers and stuff and some of my family. And I was surprised at how much positive feedback that I was receiving from my followers. And so I kept just kind of sharing and talking about it. And then I started meeting some wonderful ladies, and we had that common theme of either our own struggles or a family member that has struggled. And so I formed like a small committee. And then in May of 2016, I launched, and I did like a soft launch and started doing some local press and so forth. And then in 2017, we officially launched, and I said, I'm just gonna create a little flyer on Instagram and just make up my own day. So I made May 5th National Silence to Shame Day, and I was like, we'll see if anybody posts. We got 90 million impressions in one day. And I said, oh, okay, this is something real.
Yeah, it's an issue. It's an issue that we need to talk about. I know that's one of the kind of resounding themes that you have as it relates to mental health, is that we need to talk about this, i.e. silence the shame.
Exactly.
And so I'd like to have you kind of share with us how you think your celebrity and people like you that have celebrity can use their popularity, their connection with people, so that we can continue to have these conversations and normalize it, so people will know that even though someone may be at the top of their game, they still can have mental health issues.
Absolutely. So, you know, I talk about this a lot with my peers in the mental health field and clinicians. You know, we all have mental health. We may not all have a mental illness, right? So it's something that we all need to talk about, just like we talk about our physical health. It really should not be a separation. It's mind, body, and soul, right? And so in terms of my influence, I definitely don't think I'm a celebrity, but my influence in urban and pop culture, I think it's important for me to utilize the platform that I have. My co-host of the Silence of Shame podcast, Free the Vision, is always telling me, you don't have a separate legacy. It's not music, and it's, you know, music that's over there, and, you know, and then what you're doing over here is all one. It's all the same legacy. So I've been doing a lot of, like, I like to call it OG panel discussions. Like, I just did something for Diddy, Puff Daddy, whatever you want to call him, for his Revolt conference. And it's interesting, a lot of people were obviously grateful for what I had to say around music, but so many people were coming up to me like, thank you for the work that you're doing in mental health. So even though people might not be saying it, they're paying attention. So for myself and other, you know, musicians and athletes, it's important that you use your platform for good as well. Because people are listening and people are suffering. We know that over 45 million people in the United States suffer from a mental illness,
right,
or one in five people will suffer, which I really think is more like three in five. And a lot of our younger people, you know, Generation Z and the millennials, you know, they're having tougher times in the workplace. So they're suffering a lot more from anxiety and depression and having to leave certain jobs. So I think workplace wellness conversations are extremely important. So anyone that I think is an influencer or that is in fact a celebrity or an actor, an actress, a civil rights activist or what have you, we have to start having these conversations so we continue to normalize it. I do think you find a lot of people are opening up and sharing now, whether it's executives or, you know, founders of startups, you know, actors, actresses, and that sort of thing. And I'm just proud that we've been doing the work kind of before it was popular.
Right.
You know, just like what you guys have been doing, mm-hmm, all the wonderful work you've been able to do around mental health in Maryland and Virginia. And the same with us. Like, I think before a lot of influencers started opening up, you know, in the last 4 years, we were there. You know, I was right there at the forefront of it. And it just warms my heart to see so many people opening up and sharing. That's why I'm, you know, proud of what Taraji's, you know, planning to do with her foundation, because I know she wants to be able, she and Tracy want to be able to give scholarships to people so they can become clinicians of color. Because as great it is that we're talking about it and normalizing it, we need more clinicians of color. There is absolutely a shortage. I want to say I saw a statistic, and I can't remember what exact year it was from, but there's at least like only 4% of all the psychiatrists are African-American.
Right.
And that's not to say you can't be treated by, if you are African-American, that you cannot be treated by a doctor or a therapist of another, you know, race or nationality. But there is something called cultural competency. And so especially when you go see a therapist, you want to at least make sure they were trained properly so
right
they understand
they
your culture and your background.
Right.
There's some sort of connection. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard to treat that individual. So we need more clinicians. We need more advocates. We need people speaking out and up and against stigma.
So interesting story about Taraji P. Henson and her conference is that's really how Chris Simon and BTST Services and I got to originally work together before I came to BTST.
Mm-hmm.
And working with them on their conference that they held this June and curating the panels and panelists and workshops for that conference was really exciting for us. And it feels like you're doing some of the same kind of work that we're doing in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping that at some point there'll be some synergies for us to work together.
I hope so. Chris and I are already making plans. And
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're going to work this thing out.
Right,
there's a
right
lot of synergies there. And it's strength in numbers, right? We
excellent
have, you know, a lot of the same goals and missions and looking for a lot of the same outcomes, particularly for communities of color.
Right.
Whether it's in Virginia, Baltimore, or, you know, across the globe. You know, I just got back from a conference in Belfast, Ireland, in Northern
wow
Ireland, and I was the only woman and person of color giving a keynote fireside chat. And it was really well received from people from Finland and Ireland and all places in the UK. And so I was like, okay, we got a lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do.
And it's a universal theme, right? Depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation. So I think it's something that's very troubling because, you know, one of the statistics in Northern Ireland was that Belfast had a high number of suicide rates in the last 3 years amongst young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And they were even saying that there were like clusters and groups of kids that were taking their own lives, like almost like copycatting right after
right
one another. And so it's very interesting. And I think some of that is because of social media. Some of it is because of the stigma that still exists. And I'm not just blaming social media, but when you have people that are bullying on social media or only showing you the good stuff and not really opening up, I think that makes someone become anxious. And it can lower their self-esteem, right, in terms of
right
what's going on in their lives. And that will kind of lead to depression and anxiety within their own lives. So it's just a lot that's going on in society, and we got to talk about it.
Right.
Much
I mean,
less than what's going on in government. I won't even say
right that's
who's
enough
running
that's
our country.
Enough to
that's
make,
enough to stress anybody
right to
out
stress anybody out make
yes
everybody need to see a therapist
yes,
which I think is a good idea for everybody.
And that's
anyway
why also I'm glad that more corporations are hiring, you know, wellness directors or incorporating wellness divisions, you know, into their H&R plan, into their human resources plans,
mm-hmm,
rather. So we're finding that you know, this is here to stay. Like you mentioned earlier, hopefully there'll become a time where you go in and see your primary healthcare physician and they do a wellness check for right. you. It's not that they always have to refer out. Eventually they will refer out, but at least they can be trained enough to find out if there's anything going on. Because as you know, a lot of what affects your mind will affect other things in your body,
that's
right? And vice
right.
versa. So it should be looked at from a full approach, right? Mental and physical, or mind, body, and soul. And so I'm hoping that in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, you'll see more of that quote unquote integrated care happening amongst clinicians as well as in the medical field.
Yeah, I also don't think we can have a conversation about mental health and not really talk about stigma. And I've done a lot of training around cultural competency and stigma, mm-hmm. especially in the African-American community. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that you brought up specifically about cultural norms, about sure. us not talking about things outside of our home or not appearing to be weak. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just have you share some programming or initiatives that you've had as it relates to specifically Black men and children. I know you've worked with Jack and Jill Foundation mm-hmm. and some of the kind of things that kind of came to the top as you were working with young people.
So we actually did a 7-city teen mental health tour with the Jack and Jill of America Foundation Incorporated. And we did panel discussions, and we like to call them community conversations. And the panel discussions, we tried to have males and females represented from a clinical side. And then, of course, the young men and women, the teens were in the audience with their parents. But what we did after the panel is we did deeper dive conversations. Mm-hmm. So we put the young men in one room and the young ladies in another room. And typically we would have male clinicians lead those talks. And so many of the young men were opening up and sharing.
Right.
And, you know, we were proud that we were able to create these safe spaces, if you will, and environments. Nothing that we've done, but we're going to start doing. And I've seen several cities putting forth initiatives around barbershop talks.
Yes, yes.
And beauty salon talks. Where, because a lot of people, I think, traditionally in our culture, right,
mm-hmm.
You know, the barbershop and the beauty shop, it's like sacred ground.
Right, it is sacred. Right? It's almost a therapeutic ground.
It is, right? And you find yourself laying there, you're getting that good, that wash, and she going in deep
right.
and scrubbing right. your
scalp.
Right, it doesn't
itch anywhere.
Yeah, and so you start relaxing, right?
Right?
You start kind of opening up, and they say, how's your week? What's going on? And you find it easy to talk and share,
mm-hmm.
right, with your barber or with your hairstylist. And so why not bring mental health and wellness into the conversation in those spaces? So one thing that we're going to do in Atlanta is offer free mental health first aid training to barbers and hair salon owners. So we're really excited about doing more things that I think people in, you know, in our community and communities of color can relate to. We also do what's called Silence the Shame Self-Care Saturdays, which is a 1-hour free activity to the community. And the goal of it is just to incorporate a self-care activity into your weekend. Because
right.
we all have, you know, if you're a parent, you got to do stuff with the kids, or if you have side jobs, you know, but you got to still incorporate some time for yourself. So
right.
self-care is a must. So sometimes we'll do trap yoga.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do Zumba classes. We might have a run in the park. Or we did one class that was really powerful. It was a journal release class, and we had so many ladies opening up in there. So it's just about, you know, being able to meet people where they're at, right, and do activities where you can kind of, you know, weave in mental health into the conversation, but also get them moving, get them active, because it's been proven scientifically that when you get moving, you get, you know, your endorphins get going, it puts you in a better mood. We even sometimes bring in chefs,
mm-hmm.
you know, to teach people how to
eat
and have a healthy
right.
diet and lifestyle, because we also know that certain foods, you know, can be attributed to depression and anxiety as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
You need to get sleep.
Yes.
Sleep can certainly cause
people really do underestimate the value of sleep.
I for one, I'm grateful, and I'll find some wood to knock on. Like, I sleep, and I need my sleep, and
mm-hmm.
I know how much it means to my mental health
yes.
and wellness. And so we created this little self-care tip card, and we talk about taking a nap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's a 15-minute, 30-minute power nap, if you're going back to back to back, right, and you flying around the world, like Chris, you know, running all these you know, big super programs that he
right,
has in
exactly.
place. You got to make sure you're putting in time for yourself and sleeping, right? You got to weave in time. I tell people sometimes, they say, oh, I don't have time. I got so much on my schedule. How about adding in a meeting at 4:00 with yourself? Right. Like, I put in
scheduled time for on your calendar. Right.
From 4 to 5, I'm going to take a walk. I'm sorry, I'm not taking calls. I'll be at the park for an hour. I'll call you at 5:30. But I literally put that appointment into my Google calendar.
And I think that's important.
It's okay to set a meeting for yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And
because if you don't suffer from a mental illness, right? But if you are stressed out and you have a lot of things going on, we're human. So, you know, you may end up letting that stress get so much to you that it manifests itself either through physical health problems or through emotional problems like stress and anxiety. Or you could have what, you know, we've heard the term used in the past, a nervous breakdown or a psychotic episode. So you want to do as much as you can to try to keep yourself healthy and whole. That's why I tell people, like, don't just want to learn about mental health because something is wrong.
Right.
You know, you need to sometimes go see a therapist even if nothing is wrong. You know, therapy is just like going to see a chiropractor, right? It's about wellness and self-care, and nothing is wrong with that.
Right. Chris and I have been working on this series of similar information sessions like you were speaking about, talking about under the theme of it's okay to be selfish. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we think of that term selfish, it's kind of always got a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. But we really do need to, like you said, schedule time for ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we'd love to, you know, talk to you more about that.
Absolutely.
To see what content has worked for you.
Sure.
And maybe do some collaboration around what the content could be for this It's Okay to Be Selfish campaign that we're exploring. I also failed to mention that we're in your city, Atlanta.
Yes,
I'm excited. Yep, we're excited about it.
I heard it's been like in the 90s, but
I checked the weather and they said it was going to be 83, but it's not. So, but it's still a great city. And we're specifically here for the A3C conference.
Yes, and I'm so grateful that you guys were able to come and join us.
Yeah, so we're excited to support our CEO, but we also know that you're going to be on the panel. So tell us a little bit about the A3C conference.
So I've actually done, this is our third consecutive year doing a music and mental health panel with A3C. And it's just an opportunity for us to get in front of creatives and people within the entertainment industry to talk about it. One, because that's where I come from. That's my background, right? And so I'm grateful when I can go back in to these places and spaces with my peers, and they welcome what I'm doing now. So again, you know, and I'm friends with the guys from The Gathering Spot, Ryan and TK, and they just recently bought into the A3C platform. So they really have a robust year of programming right now around speakers and panels and so forth. So gave me another opportunity. So of course, we have D1, who is a rapper from New Orleans that's on the panel. Also, a dear friend of mine, Dr. April Umstead, who will be one of the clinicians on the panel with us. And I'm so grateful to have Chris representing BTST on the panel. So yeah, this is the first of a lot, I think, that we're gonna be able to do together from a collaborative perspective.
Right.
So we're grateful to have y'all in the A.
Right, we're grateful to be here and we look forward to working with you. I know that you also continue, as you were saying, there's no kind of demarcation between what you used to do and what you're doing now.
I'm just now realizing.
Right, okay.
I used to put
all right, free,
period,
I agree with free.
Like
he's
dot,
right,
dot.
Right. And so you still work with sometimes music producers?
Every now and then. I really have pretty much retired from the game, as I like to call it, but like, every blue moon, somebody can pull me out of retirement. Like a couple months ago, Jeezy, the rapper Jeezy, shout out to Jeezy, called me and asked me to help curate a foundation dinner for him. So
he has his own foundation, nonprofit as well.
Foundation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he does a lot around underserved communities in Atlanta and other communities within Georgia. And then also, they were like, well, but we want to do a concert for the album release, so can you help us with the concert too? And I was like, no problem. So I helped put together the concert.
That's great.
For him, which was an honor. To be able to continue to work with him. And then I do some lifestyle and community engagement with one of our sports teams here, the Atlanta Braves. So, you know, I kind of, you know, dabble here and there.
Right.
But then I'm also a paid speaker, praise God.
Right.
Because, you know, working in nonprofit is tough.
Right, right.
And you know, it's humbling, you know, to go from what I used to make to what I make now. But I really am committed to do the work. But I'm grateful that people want to pay me to hear my story and to share around emotional health and wellness. So I also speak at corporations, sharing my story in other conferences and so forth, just to kind of, you know, make ends meet.
Yeah, I'm happy you do that. I've been in nonprofit management for over 20 years. I've been executive director.
So you get it.
I get it. I get it,
and when
right?
you don't, you know, and I only have one full-time employee and two consultants and a committee that actually works for free, but, like, you know, it's like you eat what you kill. And when you, especially when you're just starting out, it's not easy to get operational funding.
Or no, it's not.
Funds. You know, you can apply for $20,000 grants here and there, but that's not going to cover your overhead.
No, and I always tell people that, you know, giving you me a one-year small grant is not going to help when you're talking about sustainability,
exactly.
which is what all these grants want you to have completed.
Which is now I'm excited to do our, you know, campaign to corporations and private donors and some of that legacy donation so that we can, you know, have the sustainability and be around for a long time.
So, Shondi, I'm going to ask you for some advice. This is my first podcast. I was blessed and fortunate to have you as my first guest, but I know you've had great guests like Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Which and, we just did. That
right. And so tell me about that and tell me, give me like one or two hints about how to have a successful podcast.
Well, one, you're doing a great job.
Okay.
So congratulations. I think, and radio was actually my major in college. And so it's nice to be able to be back in, you know, in front of the microphone. But I think you're doing a great job is being able to be conversational, right? Because when you have, especially when you interview celebrities, they don't want you to treat them like a celebrity.
Right.
You know, just have a conversation with them. And keep it casual, exactly like you're doing. And being able to just push out good information, because what you guys, we're doing the same thing essentially,
mm-hmm.
right? We're giving information that's life-changing and life-saving and doing your research about, you know, who you're, you know, that celebrity that you might be potentially interviewing or that person of influence in your community, and being able to point to certain things within their past. They like when, you know, you tell, oh, wow, you saw that or
mm-hmm.
you researched that. Because, you know, sometimes we have so much going on that we don't take the time to really be prepared.
Right.
So preparation is key, staying humble, and, again, keeping it conversational.
Well, Shondi.
You will be, girl, you, Michelle Obama. You,
uh-oh,
you got
uh-oh,
that. You
be, what?
You can just say your nice, friendly self.
Okay.
You did a wonderful job.
I appreciate it. So, Shondi, tell us how we can stay connected. Tell us how these donors who are listening
can
give.
Yes, yes. So, okay, if you want to donate, you can go to the stylistofshame.com website, click on the donate button, or you can text the word silence to 707070. You can text your donation that way. Also, we'd love for you to follow us on social media, which is where we do curate a lot of our content and keep the conversation going there. So on Instagram, it's at silencetheshame. On Facebook and Twitter, it's at SilenceTHShame, because somebody already had the full name. So we just had to go with at SilenceTHShame.
Okay.
And just check us out and, you know, follow us and post using the hashtag SilenceTheShame, and let's just keep the conversation going.
Okay, family, we're out of time, but I had a great conversation with Shondi Das, who is the founder and executive director of Silence to Shame. And we
and you can follow me if you want to follow my page.
Yes, we do want to follow you.
Shondi Das 404, S-H-A-N-T-I-D-A-S 404.
And you can follow BTST at BTST Services. And you can please follow this podcast
right.
on all
Rate
the platforms.
Subscribe their podcast. The same with us, Silence of Shame. Shout out to my co-host, Free the Vision. So you got two wonderful podcasts, breaking it down, doing it for the culture.
Meeting you where you are. We'll see you next time, family.
Peace out.
Things that's held us down, but now it looks like things are fine.